New Mexico has seen its share of big-budget film productions in the past decade, but there's also been healthy growth in the number of smaller independent movies being made with local production staff and artists, including one recent low-budget psychological thriller called Truth. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The new film Truth was shot on location in and around southern New Mexico, with a lot of area filmmaking talent involved in front of and behind the camera. The film will receive its New Mexico premiere in Las Cruces next week and was written and directed by Michael Kramer. I'm happy to have Michael Kramer on the program today. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're joining us by phone from Las Cruces, where I gather you split your time between there and Los Angeles. Were you in New Mexico when you started to conceive of this film?
Yeah, I had moved here about 6 years ago, and over the first couple of years, I wasn't entirely sure I was going to stay. I was driving and flying back to L.A. pretty regularly. I was working in cable television, developing shows, and so I was going back and forth. But being here for a little while, I started to meet some of the people in the local film scene. Met a couple of young guys who were just coming out of film school and were trying to do projects, and ended up as a, sort of a mentor for them, and as a result, ended up started working with PRC. And when PRC approached me and I got together with them, they had been shooting mostly music videos, local television content, and they were looking to branch out into feature film, and that was my area of expertise. So they brought me in. Together, we've developed the concept for Truth.
And these are mostly based in and around PRC, and the others involved are mostly based in and around Las Cruces?
That's correct. PRC is probably one of the top four or five small production companies here in Las Cruces.
As you're traveling back and forth, I guess that's a good time to conceive of stories. Walk us through just what Truth is about.
Well, Truth, initially the idea was to come up with a genre sort of pleasing film. We were looking to do some kind of a horror thriller. Mm-hmm. We knew we wanted to go down that road. And it's, you know, that there's always a marketplace for those kind of films. And it's also something that I've spent a lot of focus on in my career. So I had gone up to Silver City with a friend, and he was showing me around. I was looking for some locations and just interesting backdrops that I could use for projects coming up. And during the day, we ended up going over to Fort Baird. So we drove to the facility. He was showing me this, and he showed me the hospital there. And sort of in passing said, man, that would be such a great location for a film. And that was sort of the very beginning of the idea. And taking a look at it, really it was about $1 million worth of production value just sitting there empty. So Truth was really written for the location, but the idea was we wanted to tell a story that would be entertaining and it would be thrilling, that would be compelling, and at the same time we wanted to lay in an undercurrent that would explore racial tension in youth culture. So while you can look at Truth as a film that's just about conspiracy and sort of a horror thriller, there's deeper elements that are woven into the storytelling. And hopefully we didn't preach, but hopefully we just, you know, laid it out so that when you walk away from the film, you start to ask yourself some questions about, well, geez, what would I do if I were stripped from my ability to be deceptive?
I take it also has a very topical tie-in with our current state of affairs, in that this is an abandoned research station hospital that had developed a truth virus that was being used by the military to interrogate detainees.
Yeah, and you know, of course, we're in the post-9/11 era where, you know, terrorism is a huge, you know, in the news all the time with, you know, with the addition of things like Ebola. And so we really looked at some of the fundamental elements that are out there in news and in society and in people's minds, and we tried to put together a story based around that. So it's really, the film is really the story of the government trying to develop a truth serum. It turns out that truth serum is a live virus technology that infects the portion of your brain that allows you to be deceptive, thus rendering anybody infected with it incapable of deception. So not only are they not able to lie to other people, but they're not able to lie to themselves. And so there's that deeper psychological component there. But ultimately, the experiment goes awry, the virus gets loose, and it wipes out the entire hospital. The company that is doing the research finds that it's cheaper not to clean it up, but to just put security in and basically lock the site down and leave it there as a toxic site, but out of reach from most people. 10 years pass. The people that are guarding it are very complacent. They spend a lot of time playing video games, growing pot, and they don't, you know, they're not being very diligent. Meanwhile, a professor of New Mexico State history is up in the Gila. He's out there looking for things for his you know, his research, and he stumbles on this hospital, and without really knowing what he's getting involved in, he brings a bunch of kids from his film school with him to document the site, and they end up getting into the building, getting infected, and the response from the security team is to lock them in. So once they're locked in, they really only have 72 hours to live.
A lot of genre elements packed in there, the isolated station, the virus mutation, the naive visitors that stumble into the more trouble than they know they're getting into. But I want to come back to you. You mentioned something about the cast, the specific casting and writing of that cast. It's a fairly multicultural group of students, which is not unusual for these kind of genre films, but the fact that you try to make something else out of that, that this serum is also working on, maybe they're exposing their underlying prejudice, that on the surface they may seem to all get along quite well, as I gather as the film goes on, that their relationships deteriorate.
Yeah, you know, I work with a lot of young people, and one of the things I've noticed about sort of our college-age kids today is that, you know, they've grown up in a multicultural world, diversity is everything, so all of their friends are really a mixed bag, you know, different races, different religions, different lifestyles, and they kind of look at anybody over 30 and say, well, you're sort of a throwback, and, you know, you're a closet racist, and but we've got it all figured out. And so this group of young people that go into the hospital really have quite a span. There's a brother and sister that are American Muslims. Their parents are practicing, but like most American kids, they're not really connected to their religion or their faith. We have Native American, African American, Caucasian, Hispanic. There's just sort of a whole mixed bag there. And they all think that they're above all that. And when the virus starts to affect how they think, what we find is that there's all these tensions running underneath the surface that even they weren't aware of. And then, of course, there's also romantic tensions between some of the characters. So a lot of things just start to seep up from their subconscious, and it affects how they respond to the situation they're in.
A lot of our listeners may be very aware of all of the big-budget Hollywood films that shoot in and around New Mexico, largely because of the tax incentives and the production funds that are available to them. But maybe the story that goes unheralded is that because of all of those large productions, it's allowed for a growing base of local talent to make a living, so that when someone like yourself wants to make an independent film on a lower budget, you don't have to bring people from outside the state. There's a lot of people in the area who are already have the equipment, have the know-how, have the wherewithal to staff a film production quickly. Did you find that the case in southern New Mexico?
Oh, absolutely. It was interesting because we, you know, brought together a team, and, you know, if you took their resumes for what they do outside of the film industry, you know, you would never in a million years imagine these people are filmmakers. So we had a landscape artist who came in and was one of our key grips. We had a pizza delivery guy who was our first AD. I mean, they're doing whatever they can do to get by, but their dream, their desire is to be involved in filmmaking. And there's some really talented people out there. They just need an opportunity. And that's what we found, is that when we opened up the doors to, you know, bringing in a crew and cast from the area, that there was just a surprising number of people that have the skills and ability to make films, and you wouldn't know they're out there unless you actually went out and looked for them.
That, of course, is going to make this premiere very special. I know that you're going to be there for the premiere next week at the Rio Grande Theater, but I gather a lot of the cast and crew as well. It's a bit of a homecoming.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. We've ended up with about four or five cast members that are from the Albuquerque area. It's sort of like being in California. You know, if you want to be involved in film, doesn't matter where you live in California, you're going to end up in L.A. Right now, Albuquerque has all the infrastructure for large films. So if you want to work on a regular basis as an actor, most of them have to, move up to Albuquerque. And so that's where we found a lot of our talent for there. But we did use, I'd say half the cast came from Las Cruces. So, you know, and we had one or two that came from out of state that we brought in. And we had, you know, William McNamara, who is done over 70 feature films and television shows, just a slew of them. He's probably best known for Copycat or Dream a Little Dream, and he was probably our one marquee actor that we brought in for the film. But outside of that, we tried to really stay within the confines of the state. Of course, it helps you with your incentives, but the incentives are just that. They're just an incentive. They don't actually make films happen on the smaller level. They're helpful, but they don't actually change the fact that you have to raise the money and you have to put the team together. And a lot of that has to be done prior to receiving any sort of support from the state. So, you know, it's really a back-end part of it.
Sounds like the sort of story that's perhaps made for a sequel. Is one in the works?
You know, there's a lot of discussion about it. Obviously, any sequel is going to be predicated on the success of the primary film. And, you know, we're hopeful that this is received well. You know, if you look at films like Blair Witch, you know, and they had no money at all for the first film, and, you know, they did something very creative. And then in their sequel, they had a ton of money, and it didn't quite catch fire the way the first one did. So, you know, we're acutely aware of that. And after the credits roll, there is a little tease at the end that suggests the possibility that all is not what you think it is. And we've left that wide open with the hope that we can come back and revisit the concept, because actually I'm writing a book version of the film right now. Hmm. And the book has an incredible amount of the backstory that you'll never see in the film. And one of the things that we tried to do during the production or the pre-production phase was that we let all of the filmmakers that worked with us do webisodes. We were kind of inspired by Walking Dead, and how in the first season or two of Walking Dead, they were making webisodes about the backstories of the different zombies. And so we thought, well, wouldn't that be nice to be able to explore some of these characters who are seem very insignificant, but actually play a key catalytic role in how things turn out. So if you go on the website, they're on our website, and there's about three or four small webisodes that tell a little bit more. So we want to explore that whole world. And right now the hospital is still up there. The grounds are still there. So if we wanted to go back and revisit and reshoot up there, I think we would be very welcomed by Silver City. They were an incredibly supportive town.
Sounds like everything's all the ingredients are waiting for you.
Yeah, and they bent over backwards, really, to make it a really pleasurable experience to shoot film up there. And the same thing in Las Cruces, because we shot in studio in Las Cruces about 10% of the film.
Well, I certainly wish you the best with the film and the premiere, and thanks so much, Michael, for speaking with me today.
I appreciate it very much, and I just want to encourage everyone out there listening to go and support local filmmaking, even if it's not truth. When you see small film festivals or you see local theaters putting up small indie films, go out and support them. Let them know that this is kind of the content we want.
Absolutely. My guest today has been Michael Kramer, writer and director of the independent psychological thriller Truth. The film was made largely in and around Silver City, New Mexico, including the Gila Wilderness, utilizing a cast and crew with heavy local representation. Truth will have its New Mexico premiere next week on February 26th and 27th at 7 p.m. at the Rio Grande Theater in Las Cruces. The screenings will include a post-film Q&A with the director and cast, and a follow-up screening will take place in Silver City, New Mexico on March 6th and 7th. For more on the film, log on to whatisthetruthmovie.com. For tickets and information on the Rio Grande Theater, log on to riograndtheater.com, and that's theater spelled with an R-E. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.